Welcome to installment 160 of Sefer HaMitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains three commandments relating to the sacrifices. Prohibitions 139 and 112 regard two special types of chatoi sin offerings, those that are brought inside the heichal, and also bird offerings which are slaughtered by the process of malika. And the final commandment is positive commandment 65, that regulating the offering of an osham, or a guilt offering. Prohibition 139 relates to the bringing of a particular category of chatois, sin offerings. The sin offerings were considered to be part of the general category of kodshe kodshim, as we discussed yesterday, the most holy level of offerings. However, there were two different categories of sin offerings. They were distinguished by where their blood was sprinkled. The zrika, the sprinkling of the blood, was one of the most important aspects of the offering of a sacrifice. And there were two altars in the temple where the blood could be sprinkled. There was the outer altar, the Mizbeach HaChitzein, which is the regular one upon which the sacrifices were burnt, and the blood of most of the sacrifices was sprinkled. There was also a golden altar, which was inside the sanctuary itself, inside the Heichal. On this golden altar, no sacrifices were brought. It was used for the burning of incense. However, there were certain types of sin offerings which did not have their blood sprinkled on the outer altar. Rather, it was sprinkled on the inner altar, as well as other places inside the heichal, such as on the curtain, and furthermore, depending on the individual type of sin offering. These sin offerings, which were sprinkled on the golden altar and other places inside the sanctuary, were called chatois hanasis bifnim, a sin offering which was brought on the inside. Examples would be Purim HaNisrofim U'Seirim HaNisrofim, as we say in our daily prayers, in the chapter of Mishnayos, Ezel Mekeman, that there were certain cows and goats which were sin offerings which were burnt. Instead of being eaten, having parts of them eaten, rather they were completely burnt, just like an ola, a burnt offering. For example, if the Beis Din, the Jewish court, the Sanhedrin, made an error in judgment and informed the congregation that a certain act was allowed, whereas in reality it was not only forbidden, but was punishable by kares or excision, when the Beis Din later on discovers their mistake, they are required to bring a sacrifice as a sin offering which is completely burned. Prohibition 139 is a prohibition not to eat any sin offering which had its blood sprinkled on the inner altar. As it states in the book of Leviticus, chapter 6, verse 23, "V'chol chatos asher yuva midoma el oil mayed," that any sin offering whose blood was brought inside the tent of meeting, "l'chaper bakedesh," to atone in the sanctuary, it may not be eaten, it must be completely burned with fire. As the Rambam brings from the Sifra, that the verse states that it must be completely burned is a clear indication that it's forbidden to eat it. Therefore, the prohibition against eating this type of sin offering is a biblical prohibition, and anyone who transgresses it is given malchus, lashes. Prohibition 112 deals with another aspect of the sin offering, this time a sin offering which is brought from a bird. This bird, which is brought as an offering, is not slaughtered in the normal fashion, as we know that the laws of kosher slaughtering require that a knife be used, and the knife be absolutely perfect, both in its sharpness and its smoothness. The bird, however, was slaughtered in another fashion. The Kohen would do what is called malika, which was performed in the following way. He would have to hold the bird in one hand, holding the two legs between two of his fingers and the two wings between two other fingers. By bending the animal back, he would bring the back of its neck in contact with his thumb. And using his thumbnail, he would push through the back of the neck severing the bone in the back of the neck and going through both the food pipe and the windpipe and severing them from the back instead of using a knife. And from the front of the neck, he would use his thumbnail and go from the back of the neck. Furthermore, when he went through, he had to stop just short of completely severing the head. This is the prohibition 112, that when this act of malika is performed, the verse states in the book of Leviticus, chapter 5, verse 8, Umolak es reshe mimul orpe, that he must cut through its head from the back of the neck, v'le yavdil, he must not completely sever the head. He must allow to remain a piece of the head, a piece of the neck from the front, in order that the head should not completely be severed. To do such an act entirely with one hand, and nevertheless use enough strength to break through the animal's neck bone and both simonim, both the food pipe and the windpipe, and nevertheless not completely sever the head, was, as the Rambam describes it, min avedis kasha shebemikdash, one of the most difficult acts which could be done in the sanctuary. It was an act which required great skill and dexterity. Should a malika be performed on a bird and the head accidentally severed, the sacrifice is pasul, it is invalid, as described in the sixth chapter of Zevachim. An interesting perspective is given by one of the commentaries on why this chatas ha'af, the sin offering regarding a bird, has been singled out among all of the sacrifices to be slaughtered in such a way, by the Kohen's thumbnail rather than a regular knife. It is explained that Jewish souls go through transmigration and reincarnation, that a soul can come down in another form. And it is described that the soul of a particularly pious person can come back, will most likely come back in the form of a bird. And this bird will be brought as a sacrifice on the altar. Therefore, since these birds, which are brought as sacrifices, have souls which derive from a particularly holy person, it would not be proper to slaughter them in the normal fashion, using metal, a metal knife. Therefore, the very slaughter is done with a completely holy object, the most holy object, a person, a holy Jew, and even more so a Kohen who is serving in the temple. The actual act of slaughter is done with the Kohen's hand itself. Commandment number 65 deals with the last type of kodesh kodeshim, or most holy category of sacrifices, which we will be discussing. This is the asham, or the guilt offering. And just as the other kodesh kodeshim, or most holy sacrifices, it is slaughtered in the north side of the altar, its blood is received there, and it can be eaten only by kohanim. The actual commandment is that when an asham, or guilt offering, is brought, it must be brought in conjunction with all of the particular laws as dictated in the book of Leviticus, chapter 7, which begins, the Zeis Teiras HaAsham, these are the laws regulating a guilt offering. There are a number of occasions on which a guilt offering is brought. Again, as dictated in the chapter of Mishnah, Ezel Mokayman, which we say in our davening. In Mishnah Hay, we list the different types of ashamis. Asham gzeleis, the guilt offering associated with a theft, which also was connected with a false oath. Asham me'ileis, the one which is brought when someone misused a sanctified object. Asham shivcha charufa, the offering associated with someone who violated a betrothed handmaiden. Asham nazir, the guilt offering of a Nazirite who became spiritually unclean. Asham Metzera, the guilt offering of a leper after he has been purified. And finally, Asham Toli, the hanging, literally the hanging guilt offering, one which is dependent, which it is uncertain whether he actually has done a violated act or not. Let's say, for example, a person had two pieces of fat in front of him, one of which was a forbidden fat, chelev, and another one was permitted fat, or shumen. The person ate one of the two and was uncertain which one he had eaten, the prohibited one or the permitted one. In such a case, if it was something that the penalty would have been kares, or excision, had he actually done the prohibition, he must bring an asham toloi, a dependent, a doubtful guilt offering. Should he know for sure, however, that he had eaten the prohibited piece, he would have to bring a chatas or a sin offering. This Ashram Toli is highly unusual in that it is a sacrifice which is brought even when one is unsure that any misdoing was committed. Perhaps the person merely ate the permitted piece of fat. However, this comes to teach us a very, very important lesson, as the Chinuch explains, that a person who has done a possible sin has also done a wrongdoing. As long as he was in a situation where he did something and is unsure whether it was a prohibition or not, is also doing something wrong and also requires atonement for what he has done. He is in a way guilty since he has put himself in such a position. It is similar in a way to the chatas, the sin offering which is brought when a person has unintentionally done a sin. Even though he lacked intention, he was shegeg. Nevertheless, the fact that he could have done such a sin, even unintentionally, shows that there was something subconsciously lacking, that he did not have complete devotion to the proper state of mind. An ashram toli is even worse. The person practically put himself in a situation where it was a possible sin, and therefore he is required to bring an ashram, a guilt offering. This shows us the extent to which we must guard ourselves to even coming to a situation where it is possible to sin. Our home environment and worker environment should be arranged in such a way that everything is conducted with the utmost holiness. Furthermore, a person must have a commitment to change and elevate his environment. Therefore, even in a time when a person is in contact with a place where sin is rampant and temptation is around, a person will realize that his goal and his purpose in being in such a place is merely to elevate and sanctify this environment. Therefore, he again will not come into a possible sin, even though there are temptations around, because he knows that his purpose and his mission in being in such a place is to elevate that place and not be dragged down by it. Thank you for tuning in to today's installment of Sefer HaMitzvahs. For more information or to sponsor one of the installments, contact Sichas in English at area code 718-778-5436. That's 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.